Sustainable Hour.
Good morning, Geelong. Good morning, Tony. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks, Mick.
Yeah, good.
Another brisk morning.
This is one of the times where I have actually brought a calculator to the studio. How do you like it? You
know, tell me about it.
Because the idea is that today we would be talking more about finances. You know, the financial attraction in sustainability.
So we're going to save some money as well?
We're going to save money, but we're also going to invest. Invest in the future, you know, invest in our children. And the fact that there actually is a business case, even for things like fighting climate change. We'll hear about that. And we have some very interesting and distinguished guests in the studio, as usual. And should we jump right into it and introduce our first one?
Yep, why not?
All right, so welcome to Paul Tant. You are from Bank Australia. It couldn't be more financial than that.
Yeah, that's right. It couldn't. I guess I'm a suitable guest for today, Mick.
Exactly. So let's jump right into it and listen to what Bank Australia is and what's your approach to sustainability.
Just to summarize it, we've got a series of TV ads out at the moment that summarize it quite well. The tagline for those is change the world by changing where you bank. We are also 100% customer-owned bank. So if you become a customer with us, you automatically then become a part owner of the bank as well. So that customer-owned side of things is one side of it. It also gives rise to the second side of what our tagline is, responsible banking. Because we don't have to satisfy shareholders. We only have to satisfy our customers, and our customers tell us that they want to see a responsible bank, and so that's what we do.
Now, when I hear something like responsible banking, instantly there's a blinking light, greenwashing. This is a buzzword, you know. Like we hear, just the other day I heard about a new concept. I'd never heard about that. It's called responsible energy. Now, what's responsible energy? And then, you know, the color, of course, is green when it's marked on maps and so on. Oh, this is, you can get responsible energy with us. But when you look into it, what is it? It's fossil fuels. It's just responsible in some other way. You know, so there's all this sort of thing that makes you think that it's responsible or green. But when you look into it, like even natural gas, why do we call it natural gas? Because, it's something with nature. It sounds good. You know, there's all these words, buzzwords. So you'll have to explain what is responsible banking. Why is it responsible?
Well, that's almost a Dorothy Dixer for me, Mick, so thank you for asking that one. Responsible banking, we see it, again, in terms of three elements, people, planet, and prosperity. So the prosperity is, we're still in business to make a profit, but that's not the main aim of the game. You know, there's also the people and planet. I guess on the sort of people side, which also covers the planet, we are committed to give up to 4% of our annual profits into the Bank Australia Impact Fund, which really invests in projects, you know, to bring about social and environmental change. Specifically on the environmental side, because I guess that's what your listeners are most interested in, we have not and we will never lend money to the fossil fuel industry. That's, you know, one of the basic tenets of the bank. It's very clear. We're also a carbon neutral bank, which I guess we're one of the few carbon neutral banks around. But we do a bit more than that too, is we seek to offset the impacts of some of the decisions made by customers. So an element of that is we have the conservation reserve, which is owned by the bank and therefore effectively owned by our customers. And that's an area...
What's that?
So the conservation reserve is an area of 1,000 hectares in the West Wimmera, just between Eden Hope and Goroke, most of the properties are. And we protect that area of land there in the West Wimmera. We've got covenants over the land that are administered by the Trust for Nature, so it can't be developed. And what we do with that land is anyone who comes to us and wants to take out a loan to construct a new property, we look at the area of land that is being lost, and so effectively the area lost to biodiversity, and we set aside an equivalent area of land in that conservation reserve. Anyone who comes to us for a car loan, anyone at all, we look at the carbon emissions over the life of that loan, and we plant trees, and, you know, it's not just any old trees. I mean, effectively, it's restoring the natural environment. So bull oak trees, stringy bark gums, the kind of habitat that the kind of habitat that really will support some of the endangered species in the area.
So this is a bank that plants trees?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
when I say we plant trees, you know, we do engage with local groups. So there's a local group over in that area of the West Wimmera, and they engage with other local groups like schools and community organisations who themselves get a payment back for planting those trees. So we're not just restoring the natural environment, we're also engaging with the local population in West Wimmerashire.
So, Paul, are they like land care groups that you engage with?
Well, I guess the group we deal with that has been doing the planting of the trees is a local group called the Cowrie Farm Tree Group over there, and they basically engage with all the schools and the other local groups. But we have a lot of involvement with land care over there. Yeah.
Let's say hello to our next guest in the studio, Robert Skien from Plastic Free Torquay. And you are someone who... You know the practical sides of this with the business and the greenwashing as well, don't you? Or the companies that are saying they're doing something, but in reality, it's just, you know, on the surface.
It's one of the big challenges we face, Mick, is greenwashing. And, you know, just to let you know, I'm actually an accountant by profession. So the financial aspects of, sustainability and looking after the environment is something that's not really lost on me. Greenwashing is a big challenge. I mean, within the plastic bag space, there are a lot of people say to me all the time, yeah, but my bags that I use are degradable or biodegradable. Degradable bags simply break down quicker or break down into plastic dust a lot faster than a normal plastic bag, which means that, and they don't go away, they still are in the environment and in the ecosystems for many, many hundreds of years. So it's a big challenge for us to try to educate and explain the difference between, you know, genuinely appropriate ways that people can go shopping and those other, shall we say, greenwashed items.
Mm. So, Robert, now you're in the studio with a bank, and you can talk directly to him. You've heard what he was saying. Did it sound like greenwashing to you, what they're doing? Planting trees and...
No, not at all. And I'd just like to also give West Wimmera a bit of a plug here, because West Wimmera Shire is completely plastic bag free. And they've, you know, the council up there has worked with businesses and the local community to voluntarily get all single-use plastic bags out of their shire. It's sounds like they're doing some fantastic things up there.
Mm. Now, you came to the studio because you also have some news for us. And you have a T-shirt on talking about Victoria, and it's saying, stop bagging Victoria. Now, what's the news?
Look, there's a couple of pieces of news, Mick, and thanks for asking. Firstly, the Greens have actually introduced legislation into the Victorian Parliament to ban single-use plastic bags, among other things. They're trying to get rid of microbeads. They're trying to reduce excessive plastic packaging on a range of products as well. So this legislation they've introduced is quite extensive, and it really steps us towards a much better outcomes for the environment. What we're also have running at the moment is a petition, a paper petition that supports that legislation from the Greens. Now, the Victorian Parliament does not accept online petitions, so it has to be a paper petition. And what we'd ask everyone to do, if they can, is go to our website, which is plasticbagfreevictoria.org, go to the petition page, download a copy of the petition and sign it yourself, and get 14 of your best friends to sign it. We need full names, so not initials. We need full residential address, no post office boxes, and a signature. And again, that's not our rules, that's the rules of Victorian Parliament. We need 10,000 signatures to get that petition presented to the floor of the Parliament and to have a debate about this.
When?
We're hoping to have that by the end of June, and we're hoping to present the petition on the steps of Parliament early July, and that will coincide with the second reading of the Greens Bill. So we're hoping these things, working together with the Greens, you know, we're hoping to get this legislation debated and hopefully passed.
So that's today being the first 1 month.
We've got 30 days. Oh, we've had a bit of a head start, yeah. Tony. We're I think last count we have 6,900 signatures.
Oh, nice. That's a big head start.
So we've been working on this since the start of the year. So
yep.
We've been working on this for about 5 months. We have the petition at a number of places around the state as well. So if there's a map on the website as to where you can sign it, but as I said, what we'd really like everyone that's listening today to do download a copy, get 15 signatures on it, and there's an address at the bottom of the page that you can post it off to. That'd be a great help.
Excellent. Now, I'm curious, what does a bank think? Where's the line? Where do you draw the line between what a bank can do and can't do? Because there's so much activism happening. And when do you sort of say, no, we can't do that as a bank, because that would be too much activism? And I've seen yourself, Paul. You've been out there walking the 80 kilometers of the M2M walk. And yeah. I was thinking, oh, that's the first time I've seen a banker in that sort of environment.
Yeah.
So how do you distinguish, in a way, what's banking activity and what's activism?
Well, I guess that 80-kilometer walk, you know, I was taking my annual leave for that, Mick. So, and I'm not the one who sets the environmental policies of the bank. I'm clearly one of the ones who communicates them. I mean, my role is as community development manager for the bank for Western Victoria. So I'm actually based in Ballarat, but I cover the Geelong area. So I guess the 80-kilometer walk, I mean, I guess it's something that, you know, the bank is a natural home. I would say I'm an accountant too by training, originally from the UK. And I think, when I saw what the bank was doing, I was very keen to work for them. And I think that must be a common thing, is you see an organisation that, you know, outwardly is talking the talk and walking the walk, and you think, wow, that's an organisation I'd like to work for. And I've worked for the bank for something over a year now, and I have to say that working within the bank, you know, the values are very consistent. You see them within the bank, there's kind of no real difference to what you see outside the bank. You know, as far as I'm concerned, they walk the walk, and that's why it's good to work for them. Now, you know, the walk was something I did outside work, and I guess I got those commitments outside work. You know, we have similar, I think we've got similar views on things about the need to protect our environment. And, you know, it's because I've got young kids. Before they came along, I was, you know, I was saw the importance of the environment too, but now it's even more acute, I think. Mm. So, you know, it's very much the values of the bank are something that I seek to live, you know, I kind of live in my personal life as well.
Yeah, well, I guess that talking about your children being an extra motivator, Paul, it'd be really good if we could get some politicians thinking along those lines. The decisions they're making are having a big negative impact on the world in which their kids and grandkids are going to grow up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think sometimes, you know, you have to... I don't particularly want to get involved in a political discussion as a banker, but I think sometimes, you know, you just have to basically set out your own stall and do what you do. I mean, there's clearly a pressing environmental problem with the rate of climate change we have. And, you know, the bank is very much setting up to do things about that. And that will be the case whether we have a Liberal or ALP federal government or state government. We do the right thing according to the values of the bank, and that, as I said, is, you know, really something that's set by our customers.
Yep, and it's very much not business as usual. It's a new business with a new attitude.
Yeah, well, I guess
profit isn't the only motivator.
No, I mean, I guess we see ourselves as a different kind of bank. I mean, there are other banks in the world doing this. You know, there are other banks in Australia that, you know, there's various degrees, I guess, according to how much they live their values. But Bank Australia is the only bank in Australia that is a member of an alliance called the Global Alliance for Banking on Values. And that is an international alliance of banks who, you know, basically, I guess, see a bit beyond profit and believe that finance should be used for sustainable development and to support the environment.
Now, then what is the bank's take on this very big concept of growth? Because that seems to be something so embedded in politics and in our society as a whole. We can't do without growth. And, you know, banks have, you know, interest rates, and they're sort of also based, aren't they, in a way, in their thinking on this growth syndrome, I would call it almost. You know, and then at the same time, we have a new buzzword called circular economy and that kind of thinking. So what's the bank's views on this?
Well, I can't actually talk for the bank on that one, but I would say that, you know, as a bank, we're growing. I personally see that you can have growth, but it does need to be sustainable growth. So, you know, I'd say that from a personal point of view. I'm not giving you the bank's view there, but, you know, I think that we can still grow. and I guess it's organisations like the bank that can show the way as to how we can grow, but in a sustainable way.
Hmm. I know a mayor who very much agrees with that, agrees with you, Paul. He's called Martin Hayes. He's the Lord Mayor of Adelaide. And let's just take a listen, just 3 minutes here, an excerpt of a speech he gave at the Festival Ideas recently in the beginning of May. It was broadcasted and podcasted by the Enviro Show in Adelaide, because he is very, you could say, turned on to the idea that climate change isn't just a challenge and a problem, but it's also an opportunity.
Many may have seen, I think about 4 weeks ago now, there was Australia's chief scientist, Alan Finkel, on Q&A on the ABC. Alan Finkel suggested, we're not doing enough, we're not moving fast enough, we're losing the battle when it comes to climate change. And I think that was a real call to arms politically. And certainly, if we look at our three tiers of government around the nation, coming back from Paris in December, it is abundantly clear that local government has an enormous role to play, an enormously influential role to play working with its communities in order to affect greater outcomes when it comes to mitigation and adaptation of climate change. And there were 1,000 mayors representing, of course, 1,000 cities at the Paris COP21, out of a total delegation or delegates of some 40,000. So the size of this conference is quite incomprehensible. They've literally built a small town to house all of the meetings and all of the exhibitors. But it is clear that local government has a very, very influential role to play. And I'll share during this chat some of the policies that Adelaide City Council is rolling out as a result of that. So I'm quite passionate that local government, and especially a capital city local government such as Adelaide City Council, needs to play a leadership role. And vertical integration is absolutely part of that. So our relationship with our state minister, Ian Hunter, is absolutely fundamental to our success in this place. Because, as you know, climate change doesn't discriminate between council borders, it doesn't discriminate between state boundaries, nor does it really discriminate between nations. So this is the true matter of which many things at all tiers of government need to contemplate at any given time. We need to have solidarity on this. And this is something which I share with fellow mayors throughout metropolitan Adelaide. The Minister and I are already on the same page, but it's something we're also needing to and are advocating towards the federal government too. I often get asked the question, carbon neutral Adelaide, what does it mean? Why do we need to do it? Why are you even expending resources on this, Lord Mayor? Why are you so passionate about this and why are you so active in this space? Adelaide City Council has recently got a draft strategic plan 2016 to 2020 out for public consultation. It will become our roadmap for the next 4 years when we adopt it shortly. And one of our four key areas of focus is a eco-city, a green city. And that means many things. But it does demonstrate that Adelaide City Council takes this very seriously. We have been attributing 1% of our annual rates revenue to sustainability measures for about 10 years now. And it's actually put us in very good stead. We've built upon that in the last 12 to 18 months. But we came from a very good place in terms of taking sustainability beyond political whim and enshrining it in terms of applying resources to it over 10 years at Adelaide City Council. And I thank those that have come before me at Council for doing that, because I think that was quite insightful. It got off to a very, very good start. However, in answer to that pivotal question as to why, before I talk about the what, is that the why is that I passionately believe that this is becoming a source of competitive advantage for our city and for our state. And that can be defined many, many ways. It can talk to our livability of our city, which is absolutely critical. More people are wanting to live in Adelaide. More people are wanting to spend time in Adelaide. There is wonderful infrastructure in Adelaide, and it's a more vibrant city.
The Sustainable Hour.
So how do you like that? That's a mayor of Adelaide, a big city. Wouldn't that be inspirational if we could have a mayor in Geelong, which we don't have at the moment? I know we can't talk directly to the mayor, but if we had a mayor who talked like that in this city. Now, we don't have a mayor, but we have invited somebody who knows quite a bit about our council, I'm sure, because he is heading the new library, which is a bit of a I'm almost sometimes thinking of it as a pyramid or something. It's an icon for the city. So welcome to the studio, the sustainable studio, Alan Howell.
Well, thanks again for inviting me on. It's always a pleasure to be on Pulse FM as talk to your expert people here, and pleased to talk a little bit about the library's efforts in
exactly,
this area.
Because that was the first thing we were interested in hearing. Now we have this new building, and we don't see any solar panels up there. It looks almost as if it's such a modern building, you'd think it would be integrated into that the top of the round building there. But how is it? Have you thought about these sustainability aspects when you were building this building?
I think it goes earlier than that, and just to just give your listeners a bit of an update, we have the solar array that sits on top of the Peace Memorial.
Oh, next to
it. So that's where it sits on there, which is the basic, sort of gives us a bit of a flat surface. Putting those panels on the dome, I think, just proved a little bit too much of a technical challenge, and we wanted to keep that looking really nice and smooth. But hey, you know, also with the expansion of the gallery coming along, they have I've no doubt, some flat surfaces, so we'd like to see some more go up there as well. Hmm. But I guess that sort of energy generation part of the equation is only part of the story, although it's a considerable part in that I guess the building itself, from a design point of view, the building of it, the construction of it, and then the operation of it, the whole effort was to look at trying to get as energy efficient as we could do in the circumstances where we are put in the position of the building. And I should also say that that takes a while, actually, although it's all on the design and we're just sort of now working through a 2-year building tuning period. And the building tuning period sort of takes the actual data of the built building, so as built, and compares it to the energy model that was put together by the designers and the engineers when the building was designed by the architects. And then we start to work and try and close the gap as much as possible and even get better than the model we were given to start with.
That sounds good. So you're certainly very conscious about all these aspects. Is there a star rating on the building?
Yes, there is. We are very conscious. It was always one of the top bullet points, if you like, of the must-haves in this building, which was to achieve a Green Star rating. There are 159 six-star buildings, Green Star buildings in Australia, and about 489, when I checked this morning, five-star buildings, and this building is a five-star building.
All right. Yep.
So what I'm picking up is that you start off with a design, and that's kind of theoretical, but you need to live in the building and be in the building to work out the best usage. Is that
very
is
much
that what you're
so?
Saying?
It's and that's why, rather surprisingly, before I clarify my role, I'm the manager of the Geelong Library and Heritage Centre. So I'm responsible for the whole building and the whole of building type of activities that go on within it. So we have a range of activities, as you know, from a library, a heritage centre, a venue hire facility for people who want to hire out spaces within it. We have a cafe just about to start being built as well. So we have all these different kinds of facilities within it. But the design with getting as much energy efficiency as we could was always sort of fairly high to the list of the must-haves in this building. And yes, it does, surprisingly, when we started getting into the actual, detail of the design, there is a model and there's a design. But then when you get in the building, you've then got to start actually measuring what actual energy use is being made, how much water you're actually recycling, all the things that go into making the building energy efficient. And we've got a 2-year process, which we have groups of engineers who come in, and we have a building management system which gives us all the baseline data, and gradually we start to build a profile of how does the building perform in real time. Yeah. And that means we then start to say, so this is what we projected, say, in the number of kilowatt hours per year it would cost to run, it would take to run, and this is in fact how much it is taking, and then where do we go to start reducing the amount over time.
So it's very much a work in progress.
Always. Yeah. Every building is a work in progress. Yeah. I think sometimes, having worked in several buildings, they all start off, and in fact, right to the end of their life, they're still, to some extent, a work in progress.
Yeah, because I've got this naive notion that you build something right from the start, and it's where it needs to be. But yeah, it's
very unlikely, particularly I think, in given the sort of build cycles nowadays. I mean, this building took approximately just under 2 years from go to woe to actually build. In that period of time, you're doing a lot of the design as you're building.
Sure.
So, in fact, nowadays you don't go through a stage of designing a building on paper, handing it over to someone who works out how to build it, hand it over to a builder who works out how it's going to be built and how much it's going to cost. No, you're doing all those things in parallel. You start,
a lot of balls to juggle there.
That's right, yes. And I was, that just to clarify as well, I was the internal project manager for the library during the build process. So I was involved in those kind of decisions.
So library to me translates to knowledge, to wisdom even. It's about coming there and finding not only books, but you're such a modern library. You have all the screens and all the facilities and the events. Talking about the content of a library. When we talk to experts, and which we have done week after week after week in this show, they all tell us, or many of them tell us, that climate change, the issue with climate change, is actually not, climate change itself. It's people, first of all, the attitude that we have towards us, and it's the lack of knowledge. It's the lack of even wanting to talk about it. So in which way can a library play a role here?
I like what you're saying. I think the first responsibility of any library is to have accurate information, not just the accurate information within inside the envelope of the physical library, but access to accurate information from anywhere in the world. So that's the role that we play primarily, which is to be able to have the information that we select, so therefore that inside our own building, and that means that in the process of selection, it's getting, if you like, a sort of stamp of approval by the library, and that we also have therefore the information that has proven to run the test of time, let's say, as being accurate. I think also the other side to it is that the information that we have inside the library is also unedited information. So in other words, we want to have, we don't censor information. One of our values is to have free access to uncensored information for everybody in the community.
So does a library have a stand on climate change?
Not a policy on climate change. No, it doesn't, because it would be, what we're doing is we represent the community in terms of what the community wants to know. So what we're providing is, we have many of our customers who come in and want to know about this issue, and so we're there to provide that authoritative information and expertise, because of course we have several dozen librarians working in the library who themselves have the same values, which is to provide an unbiased information and access to sources of unbiased information. So that's what we do. I think there is another role, and we have already played that to some extent, in that because this is of great community interest, as befits and has demonstrated by the fact you have this show every week, we also provide our facilities for specialist speakers to come and speak to us. So one of our talks, for instance, coming up in a month or so, is Tim Flannery is coming to talk from his perspective on this particular issue.
And so he's a bit of a key figure when we talk about climate change in Australia. Mm. Can you explain who Tim Flannery is?
Oh, Tim is a long time, I guess, mentor for many people who support the environmental issues in Australia. He's worked in all phases, of course, also equally. I mean, he's both in his own right, he's a scientist, he's an author of many books which are not directly related to climate change, but always have a strong humanitarian interest. And he's also been, in his latest roles, he's been able to, in the Climate Council, he's able to be able to come and give an authority view based on all the information that he's got access to in that particular role. So we're pleased to see him at the library.
So he's coming here to Geelong, invited by you?
That's right, yes. He's part of our next winter programme of speakers, which we have. We have a series of people who we want to discuss ideas. So he's coming to speak in that series.
Yeah, the Geelong Library is really forward thinking in that way. I've been to a number of them, and they're just they're not always about the environment, but always thought provoking, and lots of discussion around the person who's there. So yeah, kick them up.
It's called an open mind lecture series, and it's intended to be that, to say what ideas should we be thinking about, what could spark our interest, who do we want to hear more from. Of course, in the case of a keynote speaker like Tim, very important that he gets a platform in Geelong to be able to give his viewpoint. And we'll have about that we'll be holding that in our new, of course, venue at the top of the dome, and that holds about 300 people. So I suspect the tickets are going to go quickly. If that's free, tickets will go quickly.
Yeah, all those events are free.
Yes.
So, yeah, which is another big plus. So where does the money for that come? Like, to get him here, where does that, is that in your budget? Or
yes, we allocate a certain amount of our budget to providing the funds to be able to bring people to our venues.
Now, if I look in our little studio here, this owl, isn't it amazing? This is like really, this is the transformed society already. We have a library that's talking about all the good things you're doing. We have a bank talking about that. We have an accountant who is stopping plastic bags and just talking about the environment and protection. What a fantastic feeling. How can we spread that feeling that society is changing? Because when you go out to the majority of people, they don't seem to, let's be honest, to get it. I mean, there's some scientists who did a research about bathroom towels in hotel rooms, where if you put a sign up next to the towel saying, please don't put this towel on the floor because, be good to the environment, save the planet and stuff like that. Very few people, something like 20%, will actually read that sign and care about it. But if you write a sign that says, our customers generally put the towel back because our customers are good to the environment, then 95% of people will do it. In other words, we do what the others do. We follow that sort of thing. So how do we start creating that feeling that we have here in the studio that, hey, listen, we are doing this?
I might have a crack at that, Mick, if that's okay. Look, and with the issue of single-use plastic and plastic bags in particular, I think we're finding that there is a tipping point. We've started off with a real challenge around the issue of actually getting the right information to people so that they understand the problems that are being created by single-use plastic, particularly in marine ecosystems. Once that sort of core group of people start changing their behaviour, then they're creating a conversation. They're creating a conversation with their family and friends, and that core group can grow. Once a tipping point is reached and it becomes, fairly normal behaviour, then others just jump on board, and it becomes it's got to be, the social norm. One of the stories that gets, it's not my story, it's somebody else's story, but I think it really hits home. When they were young, and I'm talking 7, 8 years old, their parents used to take them to the pub on a Friday night, right? And this is going back 40 or 50 years or so. When, dad would have 8 or 10 beers, mum would have a couple of wines. To get home, they'd throw the kids in the back of the car. No seatbelts, kids jumping around. Dad would be having a smoke. You complain about, being cold. I want to wind the window down, Dad, because it's cold. No, leave the window up. That was the social norm. It's not anymore, because we understand how, destructive that sort of behaviour was on all sorts of levels.
Rob, you forgot throwing the fish and chip bag out the window on the way too.
Yeah. Yes, well, the flicking the cigarette butt out the window. Yeah, and that still happens a lot, unfortunately. The social norm now is that simply doesn't happen. It's actually entrenched in legislation as well. But it was just such stupid behaviour.
Yep.
And it's the same with a lot of these issues we're talking about now. The behaviour is just, to put it really bluntly, it's just wrong.
Yeah.
And we just need to change people's perceptions. And changing people's perceptions through, institutions like the library, institutions like Bank Australia, will move our behaviours away from these behaviours that are causing catastrophic you know, incidences in for the environment, you know, be that climate change, be it plastic pollution, you know, and it's, you know, that tipping point is not far off, I don't think, on a lot of fronts. You know, around the world, there are, I think, about 80 countries now that have just banned plastic bags outright. There's countries like Germany, which are now 100% renewable energy. You know, these, it's, you know, and these are not countries that have just thought, oh, well, you know, we're just going to do this for no reason. There is, you know, huge amounts of scientific data supporting these changes. You know, we just need to get that information out there.
Yeah, and it's like once people start on this journey of questioning what they do every day, these unexamined assumptions that we all have, things lead to things. So, okay, I'll stop using plastic bags, and then, okay, where is my food coming from? Where am I banking? Where am I? What am I supporting with what I do each day?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's the multiplier effect, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and. You know, I get asked a lot of questions about plastic. You know, I like plastic bags, and I need them for my bin liner, you know, which is probably the biggest question I get asked. What do I do about my bin liner? And I just talk people through the fact that, you know, we're not really just focusing on plastic bags here. The amount of waste that we generate is just a huge issue. So look at cutting down the amount of waste that you use. You won't need a bin liner. Hey, you might not even need a bin. You know, if you can think about taking that journey to, you know, zero waste, which is really where we all should be aspiring, you know, that's the thinking that we need to entrench.
But isn't that a dangerous path in a way when we talk about business? Because who's going to sell anything? You know, there are actually people making a living from producing plastic bags for once, but there's also people living off, you know, removing the waste and so on. There's so much in the economy that's based on consumerism and the fact that we do things the way we do.
Yes, that's true. And by zero waste, I don't mean that there is no waste actually generated. I mean, there are things that are necessary. Even plastic, some plastic bags are necessary. There's, you know, I was at a recent event where somebody from the plastics industry said plastic is great because you get blood bags that are made from plastic. Mm-hmm. This is true. It's not a matter of, you know, completely eliminating plastic or single-use plastic, because it is a very vital product in a lot of instances. What I'm talking about with zero waste is zero waste going to landfill. So, you know, if you can't eliminate it, if you can't reduce it, if you can't reuse it, if you can't repurpose it, then you recycle it. And, you know, that's the hierarchy, you know, and we just need to, again, entrench that thinking.
I heard a really good story the other day from there's a project that RMIT are working on, and they've developed this brick which they feed cigarette butts into it, and it's getting like there's so much damage done by cigarette butts, and they usually end up in the water. But they've come up with this scheme of collecting the cigarette butts and putting them, mixing them with whatever you mix to make a brick or a paver. And it's there's less energy used in making it. It's just an incredible story about, you know, our whole concept of what waste is. So much of the waste can be used as a resource for something else.
Yeah, one person's trash is another person's treasure. And I think that's the thinking that we need to, you know, look at employing.
Yeah, exactly.
But this thing about reducing and recycling and so on, there's no money in that instance. You know, it's about actually spending less, consuming less, and so on. How does a bank, as advanced as we hear Bank Australia is, how does a bank survive if people use less and less?
Well, I mean, I guess this goes back to the response on the growth question earlier. I mean, you know, as I said when I was talking about the kind of pillars that we base our responsible banking on at Bank Australia, one of those pillars is prosperity. And maybe we just need to take a slightly different view of prosperity. I mean, we can still have sustainable growth. I mean, I guess a couple of examples, sort of anecdotal examples that I'll give you. Well, number one is of the, you know, the new customer who comes in and says, right, you know, I've heard about what Bank Australia do. You know, you've got some really good environmental credentials, and I want to move my everyday banking and my home loan to you. And then we sit down with that potential new customer and we take them through it. And we show them that they're actually saving quite a bit of money on their home loan by coming across to Bank Australia. We show them that, you know, in total, our customers for the past 3 years, say, have in total have saved over $20 million a year by being with us against being with the Big Four. Well, that clearly is something where, you know, there's already the price indicator out there, as well as just the fact that we do good environmentally. Is, you know, a lot of people can save money by coming across to Bank Australia. Another anecdotal example is, you know, the development of renewables. Now, you know, I've got solar panels on my shed at home, and where I used to get electricity bills, I get electricity bills now that say nil and so many hundred dollars credit. So why wouldn't I do that? More and more as we develop and these things, and especially with battery storage, you know, coming in now, and I believe that the price of battery storage will, you know, will reduce over the years. Well, why wouldn't we do it? You know, even things where there isn't that the same kind of price element. You know, I think people, and you know, we've said about how there's a tipping point. You know, I think a certain tipping point has come in the milk industry now, where people see that, well, paying $1 for you know, their milk is not sustainable. More to the point, it's doing local farmers out of business. Well, you know, that's just not the way we want to go. And you can, you know, you can go into the supermarkets and see now the empty shelves where there was the branded milk, and, you know, full shelves where there's kind of the $1 or the own brand, the supermarket branded milk. So, you know, I think these things will change. I think that there is, the possibility for prosperity and growth, but it's just growth in a different way, and growth where we're taking, you know, the needs of the planet and people into account.
Yeah, so it's not the bottom line being the dominant motivator.
That's absolutely right. Yeah.
So I'd like working to add, out what enough is.
Yeah.
I'd like to add to that as well, in that the cost of running the Geelong Library and Heritage Centre falls to the city of Greater Geelong. So the listeners of this radio station in their rates are paying part of their rates towards the cost of running the building. By having a more energy efficient building, it has will reduce the cost of the amount of money that it's going to take. So there are straightforward economic incentives in terms of a city's outgoings and budget to in fact have a building that costs less to run than it would have done if it were a similar building, if it had been built to normal standards.
That's a fantastic point, I think. That's so important to think about. The energy efficiency side of things is so amazing. We're doing good for climate at the same time as we're saving money. It seems to be maybe more the real argument. Economy talks and says everything, doesn't it? It's cheaper, so why not? So regardless of what people think about climate change, of course we change to LED lighting. You know, there's an example just coming out last week that four municipalities in our region here in the western part of Victoria have switched their street lights, so they have changed now 26,000 lights to LED, and by that, over the next 20 years, they will be saving $41 million in energy.
That's a few library books, Alan.
And they will be, and that's the interesting thing. At the same time, they will be sending out something like 150,000 tons less of greenhouse gas emissions. Now, but that, you don't even have to think about that because you're saving the money. The $41 billion will do the talking in a way. Mm. And as a good side effect, you have these 150,000 tons of greenhouse gases that are not coming out in the atmosphere. So that's the equation when we talk about, you know, how do we create a business model where it also actually fights climate change? That's the point, isn't it? What do you say,
Paul? Yeah, I mean, I agree. You know, I guess, you know, at Bank Australia, we've got a business model that does say that we make a bottom line profit, and that's important. But I think more and more businesses are seeing this. I mean, something else I'd say about what Bank Australia has done is we're the one Australian bank to have signed up to all seven commitments under something called the We Mean Business Coalition, which is a coalition of businesses around the world who, you know, really are looking to tackle climate change with their operations. We're one of only two organisations in Australia to have signed up to all seven of those commitments. And I think, you know, but we're not the only ones. I mean, other businesses are signing up to some of the commitments. I think it's important for businesses to, you know, to realise their responsibility in that area.
Yeah, the ones that are doing that are the ones that are going to stay the distance. Yep. I think more and more consumers now, because of what we talked about before, Rob, are saying, if I buy this, what impact is that going to have? Or if I bank here, what impact is that going to have? So they look at the impacts of the decisions we make every day, and businesses that go with that are going to flourish.
Yeah. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming to the Sustainable Hour and sharing various aspects of both being accountable and things that have to do with money, but also the thing about being a knowledge bank and about how we create a better world in many different ways. I think the aspect of knowledge which is unbiased, as you say, where we can actually, where we have a feeling of trust. Is very, very important. That's an important role. You should advertise that maybe even more, that this is what the library stands for.
Yeah, gentlemen, to be honest, we you've taught us a lot. Well, I'll talk for me. You've taught me a lot today. I was trying to think, how the hell are we going to link the three of these guys? They're coming from so many different directions.
Two of us are accountants, no, so you've got to start there.
But no, well, I think it's just a matter of getting three people that have similar views, and the connections are there. Terrific. Thanks very much.
Yeah, and in my world, you are the heroes. You're the ones who are transforming this city.
In the trenches.
And we should, as we're leaving the program, on a leaving note, just mention that there's interesting things happening in the city. Just this weekend, for instance, Saturday night, there's a film which is very much up the same alley as what we have talked about in the last hour. It's called A Simpler Way, Crisis as Opportunity. That film is screened out in Belmont. It's happening, let's see here, on the 4th of June, Saturday 4th of June at 6:30. Mm-hmm. For a 7 p.m. start at the Belmont Library.
Yeah.
So there's another library event. Another event the day after, on Sunday, this fantastic film called Melbourne Down Under, which is a film about what's happening out in the sea. It's about our, you know, in many ways, endangered wild animals under the water. But this will be it will be screened two times during the afternoon, at 2:45 and at 3:30. And there will be all sorts of activities there for kids, for young, for old, who can they can make wild animals out of recycled materials, and there will be various activities. And all this is happening because it's World Environment Day on Sunday. So World Environment Day is the 5th of June, and the event that I'm talking about here happens in St. Luke's Church Hall, which is
Barrable. Yeah, Barrable Road. Barrable Road and Scenic Drive.
And that's in the afternoon, starting from, they open at 2:30. So that's something to take your kids out to if you want to, you know, engage in this World Environment Day. And I could continue. The list is long. For instance, 8th of June is the World Oceans Day. And we also have maybe a little ad from council, which is about that you can now recycle your old mattress. During all of June, today is the 1st of June, but this whole month you can recycle your old mattress. Drop it off and you will pay, instead of paying $22 for recycling it, you will pay $10. There's various drop-off locations, recovery centres and so on where you can do that.
I think that's a Geelong company, Geelong-based company that does the recycling there, Mick. So we'll have to have a chat to them and see where it all goes. So it doesn't go to landfill.
And then we should remember to advertise, this was on the 21st of July, but tickets are selling out already now for, as we talked about before, the event where Tim Flannery is going to talk about sustainable population and climate change. So these were just some of the events that are coming up. Go to our Facebook page where we post these things as soon as they come in. Just look for the Sustainable Hour in Facebook. And if you don't want to be a member of Facebook, that's fine. We have a blog as well. You can go to climatesafety.info. And this particular podcast we've now sent out on air, on FM, will be out there in the weekend. And then you will post all the events there as well with links and so on. So you can both hear the program, send it to a friend, to family, somebody you think should hear it. And then you'll underneath see all the links to the various events that we have talked about, including links to your respective organizations and activities, the petition
that you talked about, Robert.
Yep.
And Bank Australia will get a free ad on our website.
Yes. And don't get many of those.
And the library, of course, with your right. events. All very important things happening here in Geelong. So as we're counting down, just a last, any comments from you?
I've got a last comment. In a couple of weeks, we'll have a display up showing the actual quantity of how much we're saving, greenhouse gases, water, how much electricity we're generating, and how much that's saving. So it'll be in the airlock, the foyer to the library. There's a real-time display showing this information.
That's real-time education.
Yeah, that's
for kids
that's,
especially to see. And that reminds me of that next Friday, in a week from now, South Geelong Primary School is going to open its solar, you know, it now has solar on the roof, and I think they will do the exact same thing, where there will be panels mm-hmm. where you can see what's happening and the kids can take their calculators out and figure out what's happening. Mm-hmm. Absolutely great to hear.
So
thank you very much for coming today, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mick.
Any last comment?
Oh, if I could, I'd just again ask all the listeners to go to the Plastic Bag Free Victoria website, download a copy of the petition, get 15 signatures and post it off to the address at the bottom, just to help us get this legislation in place to ban single-use plastic bags in Victoria.
And we're in the home stretch with that, just 3,000 something to go?
About 3,000 mm-hmm. to go, yep. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, we are saying, and we always end our program with saying a thing that Gandhi was saying some almost 100 years ago by now, but this is important, we think, and I think that's also what we've been talking about, that we can all be the change.
This is the news.